Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's conference. At that time, you may press star one to ask a question. You will be prompted to record your name. I would like to inform all participants that today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Tom Skinner. Sir, you may begin.
Okay. Thank you, Jennifer, and thank you all for joining us today. Hopefully you have in front of you three pieces of information. You have a couple of MMWR articles, one on influenza vaccination coverage among healthcare personnel, another article from the MMWR on influenza vaccination coverage among pregnant women, and finally, you should have the 2011 Prevention and Control of Influenza with Vaccines, our recommendations from the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. So I have with me today Dr. Carolyn Bridges, who is the Associate Director for Adult Immunization Services Division in our National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Disease. She's going to provide some opening remarks and provide really a bottom line for each of the pieces of information, and then we'll move to question and answer. Dr. Bridges will be answering questions. We also have some other subject matter experts on these various articles that we'll introduce if the need is for them to step up and answer the questions. So without further delay, I want to turn this over to Dr. Bridges.
Okay. Thanks very much, Tom. So I'm going to be talking about all three of these articles, and then we'll refer to everyone else for questions at the end if there are things I can't answer. So of the two coverage studies that we're going to be talking about today, one is on healthcare personnel, and the other one is about influenza vaccination coverage among pregnant women. But first, I'm going to mention the ACIP's updated vaccine recommendations for this season. This year's recommendations are issued in a shortened format because there are relatively few changes from the 2010-11 recommendations. We continue to recommend that all people aged 6 months and older be vaccinated. The ACIP updated recommendations include information on the vaccine strains for this year, the vaccine schedule for children 6 months through 8 years of age, and information about vaccination of people with egg allergies. There is also information provided about a new formulation of the inactivated vaccine, and this vaccine is given intradermally. I want to emphasize that the recommendation for annual vaccination remains in place, even though the strains of this year's vaccine are the same as those in 2010-11. Annual vaccination is recommended, including for people who were vaccinated last year, because levels of protective antibody against influenza viruses can decline over the course of a year, particularly in elderly and people with compromised immune systems and other people who may be susceptible to complications of flu. So even people that got a flu vaccine last year should get vaccinated again this year to ensure that they are optimally protected. Next, I want to highlight some of the key issues regarding the articles on influenza vaccination rates. First, I'll discuss the article on healthcare personnel vaccination. Influenza vaccination for healthcare personnel is important for the protection both of the healthcare worker against influenza and to reduce the likelihood that a patient may be exposed to an influenza-infected healthcare worker. Both the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices and the Healthcare Infection Control Practices Advisory Committee, called the HICPAC, recommends that all healthcare personnel be vaccinated annually for influenza. Influenza vaccination coverage among healthcare personnel is important both for patient safety, and healthcare facilities should make vaccine readily available to all healthcare personnel as part of a comprehensive infection control program. The study on coverage published today reports information on coverage for the 2010-11 season. For the study in healthcare personnel, CDC worked with the RAND Corporation to collect and analyze data from an internet panel survey, which was conducted in April of this year. The results of this panel survey are summarized in the report. Influenza vaccination of healthcare personnel has increased slowly over the past decade, and for this past season reached 63.5%. However, coverage is so well below the Healthy People 2020 goal of 90%. The 63.5% coverage for this just past season is compared to 62% for the prior season. Coverage was highest among physicians, among healthcare personnel who worked in hospital settings, and among those who are 60 years of age and older. Among the 13% of surveyed healthcare personnel who reported that their workplace required influenza vaccination, 98% were vaccinated. Among the remaining healthcare personnel surveyed who did not report having a workplace requirement, coverage was 58%. In the absence of a workplace requirement, higher vaccination coverage was associated with vaccine being offered on-site at the workplace, being offered free of charge, and being offered more than one day. Offering vaccines at the worksite was particularly important. Coverage was 66% among healthcare personnel who were offered vaccine at the workplace versus 38.5% among those not offered at the workplace. And this is among healthcare personnel who did not have a workplace requirement. So making vaccination convenient for healthcare personnel is a key strategy for raising vaccination rates. Next, I want to mention a few key issues from the article on influenza vaccine coverage among pregnant women. Pregnant women and children less than 6 months of age are known to be at higher risk of severe illness from influenza, and vaccination during pregnancy has been shown to decrease the risk of illness in the mother, as well as to decrease the risk of influenza and influenza hospitalization in their infants during the first 6 months of life. This is important because children under 6 months of age are the pediatric group at highest risk of flu-related hospitalization, but they are not old enough to get vaccinated. A study reported in the MMWR Today estimates influenza vaccine coverage among pregnant women for the 2010-11 season using data also from an internet panel survey conducted in April of 2011. The survey included women who were pregnant any time during October 2010 through January 2011. The report found that for last season, 49% of pregnant women had received influenza vaccination, 32% during pregnancy and 17% before pregnancy or after delivery. The overall coverage of 49% was comparable to the coverage for 2009-10 during the pandemic year. These results indicate that the vaccination level achieved among pregnant women during the previous season was sustained during the 2010-11 season. A very important finding of the survey was that women whose medical providers offered them a flu vaccine were five times more likely to get vaccinated than women who didn't receive a provider offer. The study is consistent with many others that document the critical role of providers in recommending and offering vaccine to their patients to increase coverage. However, 4 out of 10 women in the survey did not receive a provider offer, even though they visited a provider at least one time. The survey also asked women about their attitudes and beliefs about influenza vaccination. The top two concerns reported by pregnant women about influenza vaccine were possible safety risks to their baby if they got vaccinated and concern that the vaccine would give the woman the flu. However, women who received a provider offer for influenza vaccine were more likely to have positive attitudes about vaccine, its effectiveness, and safety. The study underscores the fact that continued efforts are needed to encourage providers to strongly recommend and to offer vaccination to their pregnant patients. So now I'd like to open the phones for questions for myself and my colleagues. Thank you.
Jennifer, we're ready for questions.
If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star 1 and record your name. To withdraw your question, you may press star 2. One moment for the first question. Our first question comes from Lisa Schneering from SIDRAP News.
Hi, thanks so much for being available to provide some good context for these three things. I just wanted to drill down on what the main newer things are in the ACIP recommendations. I was reading through it, and it sounds like there's some a bit of it, extra information about kids aged 6 months to 8 years, about ones that have only got their first ever dose.
Right. Thank you for that question. The four children who are less than nine years of age, we need to make sure that children have had an initial priming dose as well as a booster dose for them to have an optimal immune response. And so the recommendation currently is that for children who had at least one prior dose of the 2010-11 vaccine, that those children only need one dose of this year's vaccine. However, children whose vaccination status is unknown for last year or who are known not to have had a 2010-11 dose of influenza vaccine, those children should receive two doses.
And that's kind of a unique situation because the strains are the same, and that could change next year. Is that kind of that what the status is in a nutshell?
Exactly, right. Because the vaccine strains have not changed, they aren't required to have had two doses in the prior season. But certainly things could change next year depending on what the strains in the vaccine are.
Okay. One quick question about the egg allergy items. Lots of good guidance information in there. How would you characterize it as more detailed information so that more egg allergy people can get the vaccine, or how would you kind of characterize that?
Well, I think it is more information that's become available over the last about year and a half or 2 years based on more studies that were done around the pandemic vaccine. And so I think it provides more information on what the risks may or may not be for patients with egg allergy and updates that data.
Okay.
But the studies that were done with egg allergy patients with trivalent influenza vaccine suggested really that even among those patients with egg allergies, the trivalent vaccine was very well tolerated. That being said, for patients who have known egg allergy, people who are administering vaccines certainly need to be prepared to handle any sorts of allergies or allergic reactions that do occur with vaccine administration.
Thank you.
Jennifer, next question, please.
Our next question comes from Timothy Martin of the Wall Street Journal.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Two really quick questions. First, how many doses of seasonal vaccine are going to be produced this flu season, and how does that look versus last?
Thank you for that question. We're anticipating, based on reports from manufacturers, that probably an estimated 166 million or so are likely to be produced this year. That compares to about 157 million doses of vaccine that were distributed last year.
Okay. You know, do you guys have any insights on how many were administered of those 157 million last year?
We do collect data, of course, on vaccine coverage, but it's a bit hard to very, very precisely estimate the number that were actually administered. We do estimate that last season, about 49% of children 6 months, 17 years received vaccination, and almost 41% of all adults.
Well, I get the sense that last year that there were several million that went unused. That transitions to my broader question, which is, what do you guys have in terms of plans to convince people to get the shot this year, given, you know, it's the same strain? People might think, well, you know, I don't need it. What do you, anything in terms of marketing or advertising to get the message out?
Yeah, this is Tom Skinner. I mean, we have a group here that does a lot of things around vaccine promotion each and every year, working with our colleagues in the states to, you know, conduct public service announcements. I can put you in touch with someone who can give you the nuances of all the things that we do to promote vaccination or flu vaccination. So if you want to follow up with me, I can put you in touch with someone who can really walk you through that.
Yeah, I mean, I'll follow up, but are there any differences in the messaging this year versus last, or do you not know the answer to that?
Well, the bottom line is, you know, we really do encourage people to get vaccinated each and every year, particularly those 6 months of age and older. So whether our efforts have changed or not this year, I can put you in touch with somebody who can walk you through that, you know, what we did last year, what we're going to do this year, and what we do every year around promotion of influenza vaccination.
This is Caroline. I might just add one other thing, which is that the Department of Health and Human Services has a seasonal influenza vaccination task force, and there are a number of working groups trying to reduce barriers to vaccination in various segments and to raise awareness and to reduce disparities. We know we still have disparities in vaccine coverage among adults in terms of lower rates in certain racial and ethnic groups. And so there are a number of community outreach efforts that are being planned to try and reduce those disparities and also to try and target particular groups that are at higher risk, pregnant women, for example, people with chronic medical conditions, et cetera. So there's a large effort at HHS as well.
If you want to send me an email for more, send it to tskinner@cdc.gov, and I can connect you with somebody. Jennifer, next question, please.
Our next question comes from Mike Stubbe from the Associated Press.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. Dr. Bridges, I want to ask you about Table 1 in the first report, the one about healthcare personnel. It gives a breakdown of different types of health professionals. And not all of them got vaccinated at the same rate, physicians the highest, and then it went down from there. I was wondering why that is. Is that a function of education or something else?
No, I'm going to refer to my colleague, Dr. Black.
Hello. My name is Carla Black. I'm an epidemiologist in the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases. We don't have the exact answer to that question. I think part of it is education. I think also a lot of it is that the belief that people who need to be vaccinated are those who have more hands-on care of patients. So the people in more administrative type roles or non-clinical support type roles like housekeeping and food services, you know, don't feel that they're a part of the recommendation, even though they are.
Okay.
So I think that's probably most of it.
Well, thank you. Was there anything in there that surprised you all in terms of which healthcare workers or which healthcare settings had the highest rates versus the lowest?
The settings, I don't think so. I mean, the hospitals have the highest coverage, but also hospitals are the ones that are more likely to have vaccination available on site you know, have it available free to their employees on site, you know, for more than one day. And if you actually control for those things, hospitals don't have higher rates than other settings. So I think it's more, you know, the settings that have the highest coverage are those that have vaccine more available. And people who work, say, in home health care who don't go to an office every day and would have to go get the vaccine on their own have lower coverage.
Okay. Next question, Jennifer.
Our next question comes from Denise Mann from Health Day.
Hi. So my question it's the same exact formulation as last year, so that means that it would also contain the H1N1? That's the first part of the question. And then last year, there seemed to be a little bit of backlash about getting the flu vaccine, at least in the beginning of the vaccination season, because of what happened the year before during the pandemic year. Are there concerns that might happen again, especially because the vaccine is exactly the same as it was last year? And what are the risks if it should happen to a person as well as to society?
This is Carolyn Bridges. To answer your first question, yes, the same strain, the 2009 H1N1 strain, is included in the seasonal flu vaccine last year as it was in the previous influenza season. I think there was some concern last year about, you know, quote, flu fatigue. However, you know, we saw that vaccination rates stayed high last year, and we anticipate the same thing this year. So vaccination coverage for last year for children was 43%. I'm sorry, was 49%, and for all adults 18 and older was 41%. So I think that was actually quite tremendous in the seasonal year that followed a pandemic year, a year where we had tremendous amounts of coverage about influenza, and to have the seasonal year following that had, you know, essentially equal or even some small increases in coverage, I think is actually quite remarkable.
Next question, Jennifer.
Our next question comes from Richard Knox of National Public Radio.
Hi, thanks very much. A couple of things. One, a fellow from Wall Street Journal asked some of my questions, but I wanted to follow up with one of his. I gather that from the manufacturers that started to ship this summer that there's going to be lots of vaccine out there at the beginning of the school year. I just wonder whether you feel at this point there's going to be, you know, plenty of vaccine for all comers this year. And secondly, well, I can ask it after you ask that one. Answer that one.
Oh, sure. Yes. We believe that there is plenty of vaccine for anyone who wants to get vaccinated this year.
Yeah, thanks. Secondly, I noticed that there's no recommendation for people over 65 to take the high-dose vaccine instead of the normal one, even though there seems to be plenty of information that people may need more in order to get an adequate antibody response. I just wonder why there isn't any recommendation for people over 65 to get the higher dose, and if you're saying that people over 65 should be asking their providers if they should be.
Hi, this is Lisa Grosskopf. Last name is spelled G as in George, R-O, H as in Henry, S as in Sam, K-O, P as in Peter, F as in Frank. I'm a medical officer in the influenza division, and I do some of the work with the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practice surrounding influenza vaccine. Thanks for that question. The high-dose vaccine being relatively new, really last year was its first season of use. There are ongoing data being collected, and there are currently data being collected on how well it works in that population. It's anticipated that there will be some data on whether or not it works better than a standard trivalent inactivated vaccine at some point within the next year or so. But to date, the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practice did not feel that a preferential recommendation was warranted. It is something that will be revisited, however.
Okay. Next question, Jennifer.
Our next question comes from Michelle Merrill from Hospital Employee Health Newsletter.
Hi, thank you very much. I had a question about the issue of egg allergy, and, you know, there's an increase in hospitals that are mandating influenza vaccination, but they allow for exemptions for medical contraindications. So I wanted to have some better understanding of what this means. Should they not be granting as many medical contraindications? What would be the proper steps to follow to make sure that someone actually does have a medical contraindication?
Hi, this is Lisa Grosskopf again. The current package inserts, many of which have been revised for this coming season, no longer state the broad term of hypersensitivity, which would really pull in any kind of allergy to egg as a contraindication. We are recommending in these guidelines that essentially only individuals who have hives, specifically only hives, as a symptom as their allergy, go ahead and receive vaccine without some further risk stratification.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible for a healthcare worker to be stratified for their risk. As far as whether, you know, how they would be labeled to have a contraindication or not, it's sort of beyond the scope of the ACIP recommendation, at least this document, to go into detail about how that could be done. But one alternative would be to consult with their own healthcare provider and, you know, assess their individual risk.
Okay, so the employer should basically accept the recommendation of the individual's healthcare provider as to whether or not they would need to be exempted from a flu vaccine mandate. Is that what you're saying?
That would be one way to verify whether or not there is a contraindication there and support that. It's really beyond the scope of this recommendation to go into how individuals do that, though.
Okay. Next question, Jennifer.
The next question comes from Elaine Grant of New Hampshire Public Radio.
Yes, I have a question and then a follow-up. Thanks for taking my question. The Cochrane Collaboration has done a review of a tremendous number of studies and very well-publicized skepticism about scientific evidence about the flu vaccine. I'm particularly interested in knowing what's the scientific evidence to support the idea that vaccinating healthcare workers actually prevents morbidity and mortality among patients. The scientific studies that I've seen have come from long-term care settings, not from hospitals or doctors' offices.
If this is Carolyn Bridges. As you say, probably the best studies, the randomized controlled trials, have been done in long-term care facilities and show that vaccination coverage of healthcare workers in the 40 percentile ranges decreases the risk of mortality in nursing home patients. Now, it's more difficult. Of course, nursing home patients are in those facilities for longer periods of time, and it is a bit easier to do studies in those sorts of settings as opposed to following patients in outpatient clinics or in hospital settings where the duration of stay and contact is substantially shorter. But certainly we know from many studies that influenza vaccination decreases the risk of influenza in healthy adults, including healthcare workers. And that when you vaccinate people, then, you know, they're less likely to get sick, less likely to be shedding virus, and less likely to infect other people.
But have there been any studies that follow up on, say, hospitals with very high rates of vaccination to see whether that has actually reduced morbidity and mortality among patients?
Those are very, very difficult studies to do. There was one study that was done at the University of Virginia, and they did show decrease in nosocomial influenza when they really increased their vaccination program. There was another study that was done in Thailand, also in working in a hospital setting. And both of those showed, you know, demonstrated that influenza vaccination can reduce, you know, was associated with reduction of illness in patients. But as I said, these are very technically very difficult studies to do because of the duration of exposure to patients in those settings, and they're usually occurring at the time where there's community spread of influenza going on. Nursing homes are, if you will, a quote, you know, cleaner setting to try and do those studies because you limit the different kinds of exposures that those patients have versus patients in other settings where, you know, their exposure to the healthcare setting is of much shorter duration.
Next question, Jennifer.
The next question comes from Stacy Singer of the Palm Beach Post.
Hi, thanks. I appreciate it. Could you spell out a little bit more for seniors the case for why they should go ahead and get vaccinated again this year, even though the strains are the same? Can you quantify it at all, or help me paint a picture?
Hi, thanks. This is Lisa Grosskopf again. If you're looking at it on an individual basis, it's not really possible to tell for any given individual exactly how quickly their antibodies will decay after they get vaccine. We do know from studies of populations of people, a number of studies, that the immune response will drop over time, over the course of a year, and quite possibly not protect throughout a full second season. Exactly how much that will happen in any individual case really isn't possible to tell, which is why our recommendation is that to be optimally protected, annual vaccination would be recommended.
How about seniors compared to younger people?
There's still going to be some individual differences based on their previous immunization history and perhaps which flu viruses they may have been exposed to in the past. There's so many things that do influence that it's really difficult to tease out, again, on an individual level. On a population level, the recommendation is still that in most cases you're not going to be able to count on that vaccine protecting you throughout a second season.
Okay. Jennifer, next question.
Our last question comes from Lorna Benson of Minnesota Public Radio.
Hello, Dr. Bridges. I'm wondering if you can tell me what kind of a flu season you're even anticipating in terms of illness, especially just given the fact that the strains that are circulating do appear to be the same.
Great. Thank you for that question. As always, it's impossible, really, to predict what the next influenza season is going to be like, and so our recommendation is to be vaccinated, to be optimally protected so that you're prepared. You know, we're happy to say that the strains that are circulating now, look like the vaccine strains are going to cover them well. So that's good. How severe the season is going to be, which strains exactly will be circulating is something that we're going to have to wait and find out. But we have a very extensive surveillance system that will continue to monitor both disease occurrence as well as the viruses over the season.
Okay. Any more questions, Jennifer?
There are no other questions at this time.
Okay. Thank you all for joining us. We'll have a transcript from this telebriefing posted to our media relations website in a few hours. And if you have any follow-up questions, you can call 404-639-3286. So thank you all for joining us.
That concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect at this time.